everybody. What's up? Welcome back to THC, or Truly High Crime. My name is Kimmy, and every week I smoke and tell you a true crime story. So if you vibe with that, I would love it if you subscribe to the podcast, and I will just show up in your phone every single Monday, and we can do this every week, and that would be so much fun. And if you miss me in the time between episodes, then you could follow the podcast on social media at Truly High Crime. I'm excited to tell you about today's case because I don't even have that much to tell you. Most of it is just theories and speculation because it's just a whole bunch of, what the fuck is going on here. So let's just buckle up and get right into it. So today we're going to be talking about the Jameson family. The family's made up of Bobby Dale, who was 44 at the time, Sherilyn, who was 40, and then their daughter, who was 6. Her name was Madison Stormy Star. They lived in Eufaula, Oklahoma, and at the time, neither of them had been working. So he was getting a disability check because he had gotten in a car accident, like a really, really bad car accident that really fucked up his back, and then I think she just didn't have a job at the time. And I read two different things. I read that he was getting, like, disability checks regularly, and I also read that he got a one-time check, like a settlement of $64,000. That number will come into play later, but I don't know which one's true because I read reputable sources said both, so I don't really know. It could have been like an equal, like they would send an equal amount of $64,000. I'm really not sure. They were looking to buy a plot of land near Red Oak, Oklahoma, which is only like 30 miles from where they were living at the time. And so they were gonna live in a container, which is, I mean, definitely like a different way of life. I can't say I've ever considered living in a container in the Oklahoma wilderness. I don't know, like, nobody really talked about it. There's not much, like, one of their friends talks a lot and she has no comment about how they wanted to live in a trailer. And, like, none of their family has a comment about it. Or not even a trailer, in a container. A trailer would be fine. Like, that would make sense. A container does not make sense. So, I really don't have much more information there, and I wish I did, but we will get back to the container later. So, the Jamesons are just on their way up the mountain, looking for some land to live in a container on, which I guess to each their own. I'll never understand it, especially if the man's got arthritis, but whatever. But sadly, when they were on their way to view the first plot of land that they were going to see in October of 2009, they vanished and they were never seen again and never heard from again. And I have a lot of thoughts about this because it took 8 days for anything to happen and anybody to realize that they were missing. Like, your friends and family both know that you're going to look at plots of land to live on. Don't you think they'd be calling and being like, hey, like, did you buy one? Like, was there any that you liked? Or like, can I come see it? Or like, how's it going? Or anything like that? Like, do you not call and check up? And like, it's not like it was like 2004 when people weren't really on cell phones. It was 2009. So like, they were flip phones, but it definitely would have happened. And they had cell phones. So it's just weird to me. So 8 days later, so October 8th, 2009 was the last time they were ever seen. And 8 days after that, their truck was found on the mountain and it was locked, and inside were all of their cell phones, the keys, Sherilyn's purse, a GPS, and their family dog Maisie, who was alive. Thank God. We love you, Maisie girl. But she was malnourished, but she did survive, and then she went to go live with family. So yay, Maisie, you're so strong and powerful. And then also $32,000 in cash stuffed in a bank bag underneath the driver's seat, which is like, okay, definitely have a couple questions about that one. $32,000 is half of $64,000, which that number might sound a little bit familiar. I don't know if it's a credible number, so like, it's just kind of a quinky dink, you know what I'm saying? Also, they really weren't known for carrying large amounts of cash on them. Like, that wasn't their thing, and they also like didn't have large amounts of cash, so like, it was just kind of odd. So there's a lot of questions surrounding the money. We're gonna get into the theories that all dive into it, but yeah, the money is definitely weird. So, at first, the sheriff, when he got there, was like, the truck was probably just stolen. But then he was like, no, this definitely looks wrong. Like, the dog is still in the car. They left all of their stuff. Like, this is just wrong. Something's not right. So, then there was this giant search of over 300 people, and there was dogs, and there was horses, and there were drones, and they looked all over the area, but they didn't find anything. And I guess I just kind of wonder what horses bring to an investigation. Like, horses are great and majestic and beautiful. I mean, Mike Posner said it the best when he said they're so goddamn regal, but I don't know what they would bring for an investigation. If you're, like, in the woods, you could be on, like, a four-wheeler or, like something like that. I don't know. I'm also not qualified to give this advice or make these, like, claims, so maybe I should just shut the fuck up and the horses should just continue doing what they do and I should appreciate their work. Investigators spent the next few months looking for leads and, like, questioning everybody, but nothing really ever led anywhere. And to this day, there has never been a public suspect named. There's never been arrests made. There's been nothing. After the truck was found, the sheriff said that he thought what happened was that they were forced and they were, like, told to get out of the truck. Like, they were forced to stop and to get out of the truck, but by somebody that they recognized. So they, like, kind of felt comfortable getting out, but they were like, oh shoot, we have to get out and maybe go help somebody with a tire or something. But it was more, I don't know. Some people think it was more forceful. I don't know. So since it was somebody that they recognized, that's why they, like, left all their shit behind. But then when they got out there, they were, like, met with force and then they didn't make it. So, I mean, that kind of makes sense. Cops said that there's so many leads, but they all go different ways. So, like, it's a lot to do, but it's all so different that it's so difficult. Like, that would be hard. I don't usually sympathize with cops, but that would be a difficult investigation. So the couple was super malnourished and very skinny at the time that they disappeared. A lot of people thought that they might have been on drugs like meth, but there was no evidence of it at all. Like, there was none in their car, there was none on their, like, property, there was none in their house, there was none anywhere. Like, there was no drugs, no evidence of drug use, no paraphernalia anywhere. So that was just from, like, people talking. I honestly think it was just from people talking, because there was no evidence of it. And then also one of these theories gets into a drug deal, but there was really no evidence of them ever using drugs. And their family was like, no, they're not the kind of people to do meth. I just don't think so. Which, I mean, I feel like your family always thinks that and they never really actually know what's going on, but I don't know. I just have kind of my doubts about that. There was also some really suspicious surveillance video from the night that the Jamesons left, or I think it was maybe the night before the Jamesons left. They were packing up their truck. Yeah, it was the day before they left. Okay, yeah. And it showed Bobby and Sherilyn taking like 20 trips back and forth from their driveway and, like, packing up the truck to leave. But their behavior was described as, like, trance-like. I don't really know why, so I watched the video, but it's not the greatest quality. It's, like, from CCTV on, like, somebody's, like, on their little security camera in their front yard. Like, it wasn't great quality, but there were, like, a few, like, moments where they would, like, pause and not say anything and just stare at each other, but, like, I don't know. A lot of people say they looked like they were on drugs, but I just didn't see that. I'm also not, once again, not qualified at all, just an observer, but it just doesn't seem that odd to me. Like, it looks like they're just packing their car up. What are they supposed to say to each other? Also in the video, Sherilyn puts this brown briefcase into the pickup. The sheriff thinks the briefcase is, like, a big part of the case because it was never found. So they really think that has something to do with it. They have no idea what was inside of it. They have no idea what it was, where it came from, and it was never found. And they think it has something to do with what was going on. And you know what else was never found? Was Sherilyn had this little handgun that she always had on her, and they never found that. We'll get into that later too. There's a lot that we have to get into. This is really quite the story. I'm still perplexed about it. So for months and for years, they searched and they exhausted every lead, but they really got nothing until the case just went cold. Until November of 2013, 4 years later, when deer hunters came across the skeletal remains of two adults and a child. They were laying side by side, face down in the dirt in a very, very isolated area, about 3 miles from where the truck was found. So definitely would have been an area that was searched when they initially went missing. So at this time, it wasn't confirmed to be the Jameson family, but like all of the evidence kind of pointed to them. And the family was like happy to get closure, but how happy can you really be in a time like this? And they all said, like, all of the family members believe that foul play was involved. They think they were murdered, and they already knew that the family had probably been dead, which is so heartbreaking. Like, that's so sad, and to have no idea what happened, I literally couldn't imagine. And since the bodies had been in the wilderness for so long, they were really badly decomposed and hard to identify. It took a really long time to get to test their DNA, and nature had really kind of taken its toll on them, and there was really no identifying features. They weren't able to find anything. They searched the area, and they also found shoes, pieces of clothes, adult teeth, and an adult arm and leg bone fragments. And the following summer, after the DNA finally came back, the remains were confirmed to belong to the Jameson family. But they couldn't determine a cause of death. They couldn't find a manner of death. Like, there was literally nothing that was ever, like, officially determined. So there's no answers to whatever happened to them that night. Literally nobody knows. There's no answers. There's no closure. All we know is that one day their car was found, and then a couple years later, their bodies were found. It's so haunting. So I have a lot of questions. First of all, why did they not find these skeletons or bone fragments or teeth or anything during the first extensive search? And then I realized it's because they would have been bodies at that point. Like, they weren't skeletons when they did the first search. They were bodies. So my first question is, were they dumped there later? Like, were they put there at a later time after the search was over and then just, like, left to rot there? Or, like, how did they miss their bodies? Like, what had happened there? Like, I have questions about that. I also want to know where the $32,000 came from. I don't know how they would have saved that. Like, were they planning to buy the land in all cash? And was that their plan all along? Like, what's going on there? And there's just some wild, wild, wild theories out there that try to explain what might have happened to the Jameson family. It goes from, like, witchcraft to Satanism to white supremacy to cults, or literally just a bad nature walk. But we will dive into it right after this quick smoke break. So the easiest explanation that they could come up with was that maybe Madison ran away from the truck and then they ran after her, so they left everything else behind, but then they all got lost and they died of hypothermia. But the family's like, yeah, no fucking way. Like, Madison would not run into the woods away from her family like that. That's just not gonna happen. So the alternative to that was that, like, maybe they went on, like, a hike or something and then they got lost and once again died of hypothermia. But this makes no sense at all, because if they went on a hike willingly, they would have taken their stuff with them that could guide them, like their GPS and their dog and their phones, or, like, literally anything else. And Bobby, the dad, had a fucked up back, so he's not gonna go for this, like, wilderness hike just for fun. Like, he's got a bad back. He's not gonna do it willingly. And all of the other family were like, yeah, no, that's just not what happened. There's no way. This would have had to have been forced, which, if they were kidnapped or something like that, it sounds like that's what happened. Like, it sounds like that's why they left their truck. It had to have been forced. So that takes us to the next theory, which would have been, like, a drug deal gone wrong. So, like I said earlier, the Jamesons were very frail and very thin at the time that they disappeared, so that made, like, investigators and friends think maybe they were doing meth, but they were like, probably not, though. It just didn't seem like something that they would do. It would also help explain the $32,000, though. So I just Googled how much meth you could get for $32,000, and my FBI agents are definitely taking a look at me, because I've Googled some weird fucking shit in the last couple days, and they're probably just like, are you okay? But I just need them to know it's for a podcast. It's not for me. It's for a podcast. But anyway, I didn't realize how much money was in the meth business. I read this story about this meth dealer who, in 2007, which was 2 years before this family went missing, would buy a pound of meth for about $30,000. And then in a couple days from that, he could make almost $200,000. So he would make $813,000 a year, and he would work 15 hours a week. That's fucking crazy. Like, I feel like a lot of meth addicts, this might sound super ignorant. This might be, like, obvious information, and I'm just, like, this ignorant person who knows nothing about it saying something. But I feel like a lot of people that end up addicted to meth probably get into it for the money that's in it. Like, they probably start, like, oh, fuck, I can make a lot of money, and then they accidentally do meth one time and then they're hooked, which is really sad. So, like I was saying too, the behavior in the video before they left made people think that they were doing drugs because they were in that, quote, trance-like state. Like I said, I didn't see it. And we can't see the full video. I couldn't find it anywhere on the internet. I could just find a couple little snippets, but it's like I said, it's weird, but it's not that weird. And like I said earlier, there was no evidence of drug use ever found anywhere. So I just don't think they were drug users, but Sherilyn's best friend, Nikki, who is going to come into play a lot here, so I remember that name. Sherilyn's best friend, Nikki, told the Daily Mail, who surprisingly had the biggest feature story on this case, that it wasn't totally inconceivable that they got mixed up in a shady deal to get some money. Like, she wouldn't put it past them, you know? Like, she was like, maybe I could see that happening if they needed the money, which they did. Sherilyn also had an older son named Colton, and like right now he would be like in his mid-20s-ish. He had lived with them for a long time before they went missing, but a couple months before it happened, his dad got custody of him. So Sherilyn stopped getting child support, so then she then in turn struggled to make her house payments. So she was already depressed, and she was already struggling with bipolar disorder. She just became so much more depressed. And she even attempted suicide. So they were really, really having a rough year. And possibly those are some triggers that could lead somebody into doing drugs or selling / moving drugs. But if they weren't part of a drug deal, it could possibly be that they stumbled upon one or they saw too much and they got killed. Apparently, the San Bois Mountain Range, where they were when they were looking for land. My cat is being so fucking weird right now. Hold on, give me one second. I don't know why, but he always tries to tear down this, like, map that I have hanging up. He always tries to, like, climb it, and, like, it's only hanging up by a tack. Like, that bitch is gonna fall, and it's not gonna be a pretty sound, so it might happen when we're recording. That'd be fun. Anyway, apparently the San Bois Mountain Range, where they were looking for the land to put their container on, has a reputation for being a place where people make meth labs. The only place I could read that was in that Daily Mail special. I looked up, like, any, like, specific meth labs that have been busted in that mountain range, and I couldn't find any. However, they're not wrong that meth was a huge problem, like, in the world and in Oklahoma at the time. It has since declined, but in 2011, over 900 meth labs were busted in the state. Like, that's crazy. That's a lot of meth labs. This is also gonna sound ignorant, but I am, like, grew up in the Midwest. Heroin was the problem here. I didn't know meth was, like, still an issue. I'm happy to see it's on the decline. So it is possible that maybe while they were up there, they saw something, like a drug deal or something, like, being made that they shouldn't have, and then they were killed for it. One of their parents claimed that recently, like, in the couple of, like, weeks before they went missing, Bobby had called the police and, like, tried to bust a few meth labs that had been, like, causing them some annoyance near them. So, like, there's a little connection there, but, like, not much. There's really not much to get from it. The last picture that was found on Bobby's cell phone is of Madison standing on a rock having a little bit of a temper tantrum. It was taken on top of the mountain, and a lot of people say that the picture is super suspicious. Bobby's mom says that Madison usually loved having her picture taken, especially by her parents, so she would have been, like, posing and having a good time. But instead, in the picture, Madison is, like, looking away from the camera. She's got her arms crossed. She's, like, visibly been crying, or she's very upset. And to me, it just kind of looks like a 6-year-old having a temper tantrum. I don't have kids. I'm not a mom. I can't, like, make a statement on this, but I don't know. People think that whoever did this to them took the picture and then locked the cell phone in the car. Like, took a picture of Madison in distress. But I don't know. It's just, I mean, I feel like they were, like, I mean, we're here. We should take a picture of her, even though she's a 6-year-old having a temper tantrum. We want to remember that we came here. Albert. Now he's learning how to open the door by himself. I mean, he knows how, but he needs to learn how to do it quietly. He's a Maine Coon. I don't know if anybody else out there has Maine Coons, but he's literally a dog. Like, I call him my dog cat. He's a genius, and he acts like a dog. He plays fetch. Anyway, back to what we were actually talking about here. Sherilyn's mom, Connie, says that this theory is what she believes. She thinks that they saw something that they shouldn't have, and then they had to just pay the ultimate terrible price for it. Which I think if I were in her position, if somebody in my family who I loved so much had gone through something so terrible that you didn't have an answer to, and you had no idea what happened, I think I would also just draw connections and tell myself that that's what happened, and then that's how I would go to sleep at night. So, like, I absolutely get it, girl. In the months leading up to their disappearances, not only were Sherilyn and Bobby, like, super thin and already having, like, a rough time with life in general, but they were also acting straight up fucking weird. This is another reason that people think they might have been on drugs. Sherilyn said she had seen three ghosts that made up this little family, and they were named Michael and Emily, and then their daughter would, like, talk and play with Madison. Now, people, like, later have, like, speculated that that was just Madison trying to cope with her parents' mental disorders. So she would, like, have imaginary friends, and then her mom's bipolar disorder kind of drove her to believe that the people that Madison were talking to were real. That was just all, of course, later speculation. But Bobby had also said that he saw spirits on top of the roof of the house pretty often, and one of them had, like, big giant wings. That would be really, really scary. One, if you were seeing those things, because I don't know what you see. That's up to you to believe. And two, if you think you're seeing those things. Like, that's a really, really scary place to be. So they were a religious family. And Bobby had asked his pastor, like, a few times. Okay, hold on. I need to resituate because I'm packing something up. Bobby had asked his pastor, like, on multiple occasions if there were, like, special bullets that he could buy that could be used in, quote, spiritual warfare. So he, I think, really thought he was seeing things in his house, and maybe he was. I am not one to just tell him that he wasn't. I don't know. I'm not gonna just be a disbeliever in the supernatural, but it's not really my path to go down and research. He also told his pastor that he was consulting the Satanic Bible, so he had been, like, really, really doing everything he could to get these presences, like, off of his property. I can't find the words. That would be something, like, really, really scary to go through. I honestly couldn't imagine. Every time I watch those, like, haunted, like, those scary movies about, like, the haunted house, like, the Insidious movies and stuff like that, like, those don't really scare me because I don't necessarily believe in it. It's just, like, a personal thing. Don't come for me. I prefer, like, really fucked up and deranged movies. Sometimes I'll watch those movies and I'm like, maybe there are ghosts everywhere. Like, maybe they're all just here with me in this bathroom while I record this podcast. That wouldn't be too terrible, because then I would have an audience and I wouldn't feel like I'm just talking to a brick wall. A witch Bible was also found in their house after they had gone missing when they did the search. So obviously this was, like, something that they believed in strongly and, like, they held beliefs for. The thing is, though, they might not have been seeing anything. They might have just been mentally ill and paranoid. Their friend Nikki, who I talked about earlier, said that she also thought that the house was haunted, and she had had, like, a few experiences herself. She said that she felt, like, a horrible presence in the house whenever she was there, and that one time she was sitting in their living room, and she saw, like, a gray mist descend down the stairs, is what she said. I don't really know what that means. Like, was it, like, I don't know. I hate when people aren't descriptive with their, like, ghosts or spiritual encounters, because, like, you need to give me everything because I wasn't there. And, like, you need to try to convince me to believe you. A gray mist? That just kind of bothers me. And then Nikki also said that on a few occasions, Sherilyn had told her that Bobby would, like, charge at her with, like, dead black eyes, like he had been possessed. So now I'm just kind of like, huh? Like, this could all be bullshit, and maybe Nikki just didn't want to admit that her friends were, like, a little bit crazy, but I don't know. There's just, like, a lot there. I feel like these people really, really needed help, and they didn't have anybody to give it to them or help them find it, which just makes me sad. So, back to that witch Bible that I was talking about for a brief second, like, 2 minutes ago. I don't know. I can't tell time, but I just brought it up. So Nikki and Sherilyn were both into witchcraft. And after Sherilyn went missing, Nikki would, like, admit that she didn't take it very seriously. Like, she didn't think it was, like, real or, like, could do anything. But Sherilyn kind of did. Which, like, good for them. Like, if that's what they want to do and, like, spend their time on, I think if you do it appropriately, that's a cool thing. And Nikki said that her and Sherilyn had bought these matching, like, witch Bibles, like, years ago. And they put them out on the coffee table, like, as a joke, because they were, like, witches together. Which is, like, okay. Good for you, I guess. So that's the, you know, that's the witch Bible that they found when they were searching the house. Also, do you remember how they were gonna live in a container? This container was, like, in their backyard for the time being, like, before they moved. And it had the words, quote, "witches don't like their black cat killed with the wrong form of their," written on it in spray paint on the side of it. Apparently, some of Sherilyn's neighbors had been, like, poisoning their cats, so she wrote that on the container to, like, try to scare them off. And she was also known to write, like, "go away demons" on random things throughout the house, and Nikki was like, oh, that's just how she copes with things. Like, excuse me, you need to get your friend some help. Like, that's not a healthy coping mechanism. Like, if she's got demons that she wants to get out, then she's got to talk to somebody, not just write down for them to go away. Ugh. But you know what is a healthy coping mechanism? The smoke break that I am about to take. So, as you can tell, Sherilyn's friend Nikki has a lot of thoughts about the case, and she has a lot of theories, and for that, I absolutely love her. I don't care how bizarre or how far out the theories are, I love that she has taken the time out of her life to dedicate figuring out what happened to her friend. Like, that is a good fucking friend. She would be me if any of my friends or family members went missing. I would be like, okay, goodbye job, goodbye life, goodbye family. Like, I'm going to find out what happened. I'm going to find this person. So good for her. Anyway, pretty much right after the family went missing, she quit her job and she devoted all of her time to figuring out what the fuck happened. And she says that as soon as she started doing some digging, she was contacted by this anonymous woman who, buckle up, said that Bobby and Sherilyn were on the hit list of the United Whites cult, also known as the KKK. So before she had gone missing, Sherilyn had recently found out that she was part Native American. So there was also this man who started working at their house when Bobby got his disability because he couldn't do as much around the house. So this man started working for them and he started saying some racist ass shit to her about how he doesn't like Native Americans and how he only likes white people. So Sherilyn then one time was really scared. So she chased him off of the property with a gun. And a couple reports said that she shot the gun in the ground to like scare him to make him go because he wouldn't leave. But then a couple of them say that she just chased him off the property with the gun. So I don't really know what happened and what that necessary, like what that whole situation was. But maybe he was in the KKK and he complained about the Native American woman who was white passing and said like what she did to him. And then she was put on a hit list. That wouldn't really surprise me at all because of how disgusting this country is and how it's the literal fucking KKK that we're talking about. But apparently this guy himself, like the guy who she chased off the property, had a solid alibi. I think he was actually in jail is what I read, like at the time that it happened, but they never looked to see if he was tied to the KKK. So I feel like there could have been some connection there. The last two theories that probably make the most sense. The first one is that Sherilyn was off of her medication for her bipolar disorder and she was experiencing psychosis that led to a double murder suicide. There was an 11-page hate letter written to Bobby that was found in the truck. It was written by Sherilyn and it just talked about how he wasn't a good parent and how she hated him and he wasn't a good person. 11 pages of it though. The person that you have a child with, that you're married to, you could write 11 pages about how much you hate them. But don't worry though, because Sherilyn's mom and her best friend Nikki said that this was normal and it was just her version of therapy and that their marriage was kind of strained and kind of stressful, but she would just let her frustration out in a little letter and then she would move on. Hell fucking no. Like, that is so gross. She needed some real therapy, some real intensive therapy. And I don't understand. I mean, I do understand that she was off her medication, but what could somebody do to you to make you have 11 pages worth of hatred to write about them? And it was typed too, 11 typed pages. And it was with them in the car. So I just find that a little odd. So did the investigators. So did a lot of people. To me, I just can't believe that her friends and her family were okay with her doing things like this. That's so unhealthy, and I wish that somebody would have tried to, like, maybe get her some help or, like, help her take her medication regularly. Also, do you guys remember when I said that Nikki said that Sherilyn told her that a few times Bobby would, like, charge at her with dark eyes and it, like, felt like he was evil? That sounds like somebody was, like, that sounds like Sherilyn was reaching out but not really knowing how to do it. It sounds like she was trying to be like, my husband charges at me and it's really scary sometimes. But then I feel like maybe like she didn't know how to make it real. Like maybe she put it in like a hypothetical situation and Nikki didn't pick up, which like no shade to Nikki at all. Like you can't sometimes know unless you're the person experiencing it. So I get that. But that part just really kind of messes with me. I wish she would have had the help that she deserved. It was already a really, really dark time for her. Like, her sister had just suddenly died. She got stung by a bee and, like, she was allergic and she died. Like, it was, like, super sudden. And it wasn't only her sister, it was her best friend. And I literally could not imagine. That would be such a painful, painful loss. And then in that same year, she lost custody of her son. She lost a lot of money. They were having money problems. She was like seeing things that were maybe happening, maybe weren't happening in her own home. Like, that would be a really fucking hard time for anybody. And also, the gun that Sherilyn was always known to have on her, like the one that she used to chase that guy off the property, that was never found. But the cause of death was never able to be determined, so, like, we don't know if it was a gunshot, and we can't trace it back to that. And the way that they were found is also super odd to me. They were all three laying face down next to each other, so she couldn't have, like, ended her life in that position. Unless the bodies were, like, moved there later, or maybe she drugged them, and then they all just laid down, but that's just so weird. Like, that just doesn't feel like a realistic situation. It's so weird, and I have so many fucking questions. Now, the last theory is, like, one of the most, like, widely believed and most popular believed because it's pretty fucking straightforward. Bobby had a really, really strained relationship with his dad that got a lot more sour towards the end of Bobby's life. So, just for clarification purposes, Bobby's dad's name is Bob. So, when I say Bobby, I'm talking about the husband of Sherilyn who disappeared in 2009 and is now dead. Bob is Bobby's dad, Bob Sr. But I'm just gonna call him Bob because I don't feel like saying Bob Sr. every single time. So, in November of 2008 and April of 2009, Bobby had claimed that Bob threatened to kill him and his family twice. Bobby said that his father was a, quote, very dangerous man who thinks that he is above the law and was involved with prostitutes, gangs, and meth, end quote. And I know that we say sex workers now. We do not use the word prostitute because it's just not nice. We say sex workers. But I was reading a quote. Bobby wrote that his dad had also run him over with his car in 2008, and he also said, quote, my entire family is severely scared for their lives, and I am in fear at all times, end quote. So that's pretty much like, yeah, I'm scared that my dad's gonna kill me. Boom, they all go missing, and why wouldn't you just think, okay, it's the dad? Like, you'd think that's, like, the most clear path. Also, just to put on top of that, at the time of the disappearance, Bobby was suing his parents. So he claimed that he worked at his dad's gas station for free for, like, a bunch of years because they had an agreement that once the dad was done with the gas station, he would get the money. But then the dad sold the gas station and gave the money to their other son and didn't give Bobby anything. So, like, yeah, he was pissed. He was suing his parents, rightfully so. Like, as much as I know from the situation, I think Bobby's in the right. And the case was actually still open at the time that they disappeared. So I just think that's super shady and suspicious. But Bob had actually died in December of 2009, 2 months after the disappearance. And he took out his ex-wife and Bobby from his will. So he left everything to Madison. And at the time, she was a missing person. But now we know that she was sadly dead. So he left everything that he had to a six-year-old girl. And then it all just went to the state. Like, was that really worth it? Bob was really, really quickly ruled out as a suspect, though, because his health was really bad at the time of the disappearance, and he was living in a home and, like, had a solid alibi. So maybe it wasn't him directly, but I feel like that definitely needs some more looking into. Like, did he put somebody up to it or something? Because that's pretty fucked up. Like, a lot of the stars align there, and, you know, they really shouldn't. You know Sherilyn's good friend Nikki that I've been talking about? Nikki, we love that bitch. Well, for some reason, she thinks that Bobby's dad was connected to the Mexican mafia. I literally have no idea why. She just said, and I've heard he was, like, she's quoted in Daily Mail saying, and I've heard he was connected to the Mexican mafia, but that's all I've heard. But now, like, every other article quotes it as if it's fact, and, like, it's not. It's literally just, like, pure speculation. Anyway, I literally have no fucking idea what happened, but I will ask my freaking questions and give my freaking thoughts after this last smoke break. Not to say I told you so and rub it in your face, but I told you that you'd be coming out of this with way more questions than you are answers. Here's some of mine. How did their bodies get missed during the first search? I don't think I'll ever get past that. I feel like they had to have been placed there later because I know the wilderness is a big place and there's a lot going on and maybe they just missed it, but there was 300 people involved and dogs and horses and drones. Like, you'd think that somebody would have seen three dead bodies laying face down. That just, I don't know. That part just really, really messes with me. I think they were placed there later, personally. Because if they weren't, how did the majority of their bodies stay in the same place for years while just out there in the wilderness? Like, yeah, they got, like the elements went through their bodies, but they stayed in the same place, pretty much. And, like, yeah, I just, it kind of, I think they were put there, like, not long after they died, but I definitely think they were put there after the search. Why did they want to live in a container in the Oklahoma wilderness when it was about to be winter in Oklahoma? Especially if this man has a fucked up back. Like, it's going to take a long time to winterize and weatherproof this container, and it's not going to be good for his health, and it's not going to be fun, especially with a 6-year-old girl. Like, it's going to be freezing cold out there. Like, what's the plan? I don't know if there was one. So that just kind of scares me. Why were they going out there? Like, did they just want to be completely off the grid? Were they trying to escape the demons and the ghosts in their house? Did they feel like it was their only option? Like, I just have a lot of questions. And this is purely based on my own speculation, but to me, they just kind of seemed like a mentally unstable couple that didn't have the support that they needed. Sherilyn was obviously struggling, and it wasn't uncommon for her to stop taking the medication. For her bipolar disorder is what people around her said. It just seems to me like they had a lot going on and they thought they were doing everything that they could to stop it. Like, they thought that trying to find, like, the special bullets to fight in satanic warfare would help their family. Like, they thought they were doing everything they could when in reality they just needed somebody to help them with their mental health. And that also kind of breaks my heart for Madison, because she had been, like, recently pulled out of school. They started homeschooling her. Like, I feel like they kind of had a break. I feel like they hit their break and they were like, oh my god, we're gonna go live in a container with Madison in the freezing cold, and they didn't think it through. And then I think maybe, I don't know, maybe they didn't think it through and Sherilyn was depressed already and was like, we can't do this, and then killed everybody. Or that was just kind of a tangent. What I was going to say was that if she was, like, super triggered up in the woods with Bobby and she wrote that 11-page letter, but that wasn't enough to get out her rage, and then she ended up killing him, and then maybe she felt guilty and she killed Madison and herself too. But then how were the bodies all face down laying together like that? Or maybe it's just something that hasn't even been speculated yet. Like, there's so many options out there. Or maybe it really is just as simple as they went for a walk, they got lost, and they huddled together for warmth, and then they died from the elements. But that just doesn't make any sense, because why didn't they take anything with them that could have helped them? Like the GPS, or the dog, or their cell phones, or literally anything. It literally feels to me like either it had to be an inside job, like one of them did it, or they were forced to leave their truck and their things and they were killed. But by who? No matter what theory I look into, it's always like, oh, but what about this or what about that? And it is so fucking aggravating. The lack of knowing has got to be so difficult for the friends and family. I literally could not imagine having to go to sleep at night not knowing what happened to the people that you love the most. If you have any information that might be able to help find out what happened to the Jamesons, please call the Latimer County Sheriff's Office at 918-465-4012. So my research about this case led me to this thing called the Line of Tragedy, and I've actually, like, never heard of it, shockingly. It's, like, something that I would definitely get lost reading about at, like, 4 o'clock in the morning one night, but I've never read about it. So it's, like, the 35th degree latitude. It's called the Line of Tragedy because a bunch of, like, brutal murders and disappearances have taken place on that line. So Andrea Yates, the woman who was experiencing postpartum psychosis and killed all 5 of her children, that happened on that line. The murder of Pastor Carol Daniels, which was, like, super disturbing and gross, happened on that line. The Oklahoma City bombing also happened on that line, and the Jamesons went missing. What an odd phenomenon. So if you live on that latitude line, be careful, girls. Like, watch out. And let me know your thoughts about this case. This case is really similar to the case of this guy named Tommy Estep, who went missing from the same area a few years after the Jamesons. His truck was also found nearby with his debit card and his license locked inside, and his remains were found about 4 years later nearby in a heavily wooded area. So maybe the cases are connected. I would have to do some more digging, but at this point, I would literally take any kind of answer or closure or connection. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so I show up every week in your phone and we get to talk and just hang out. I just want you to hang out with me, please. I was clenching my teeth. I don't know if that's going to translate well through just microphone, but anyway, also follow me on social media at Truly High Crime on Twitter and Instagram. Also, if you want to like send me this little like monthly support donation, there is a link in the description, and I would really appreciate that. That would just be so nice, because who's not broke these days? Have a wonderful rest of your day. I hope that you can think about something other than what the fuck might have happened to this family. Also, if you live in the 35th line, just please, 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 they're 35th line. I know that's not the correct way to say that. I'm just saying it as it comes into my head. If you live in the 35th line, just be careful, please. Okay, bye.